As a heads up, this episode is based on a plotline from the Amazon Prime show Outer Range. The plotline I will discuss is only present in the first few episodes of the show, and is pretty much removed from the actual plot. I'm going to do my best to stay away from the other parts of the show and only focus on the legal questions of land disputes. It should be easy to follow this episode if you have no idea what the show is about, and it shouldn't spoil the show for you if you haven't watched it yet. Hi, this is Celeste, and this is Wait, Is That Legal? A podcast that comes from my own curiosity about the legal questions raised in TV shows and movies to determine what would or should have happened in the real world. So join me, a real lawyer, as I try to offer legal advice to fictional characters in fictional scenarios using real laws. This podcast is not intended to offer real legal advice to real people in real legal situations. It is just for fun. Imagine that you recently bought a house, but when you decide to build a nice shed in the backyard, you encounter a problem. In order to build a shed, you have to comply with certain rules, mainly that the structure must be placed a certain number of feet from the property line. Not a problem, you say, and you have someone from the city come out to mark the property line. The person from the city tells you that according to the deed on record, your property actually extends into an area that your neighbor clearly thinks is theirs, because they have planted an entire garden on that land. So now what? Is that actually your garden? Where do you build your shed? How far over do you mow your lawn? How do you break the news to your neighbor with a bottle of wine and some cookies? Like, hi there, I just moved into the house next door. Yes, it's lovely to meet you too. Oh, by the way, your lovely roses are actually on my property. Believe it or not, this is a scenario that a lot of people find themselves in. I've heard more than one example of this from friends and family members, either about their own situation or that of someone they know. This is also the scenario faced by the Abbott family on the show Outer Range, although on a much larger scale. The show is based in Wyoming and focuses on the Abbott family. The Abbotts have been raising cattle on their ranch for generations, the same as the case for their neighbors, the Tillersons. In the first episode of the show, it is revealed that the Tillersons believe that the Abbotts have encroached about a mile into their property, and they want that land back. At stake is several hundreds of acres of grazing land and the mineral rights under the land. We know that it must be at least 640 acres, because that's how many acres are in a square mile. And presumably, if it's encroaching in a mile, it's probably about a square mile. But it's likely that the pasture is actually way more than just 1 mile long. So we're probably talking more like thousands of acres, which is a lot of land. So the Tillersons serve the Abbotts with their claim for this land. The craziest part of this whole scenario is that the Abbotts actually go to see their lawyer, which usually never happens on these shows. The lawyer lays out these facts for us viewers. The Tillerson Ranch was established in 1872, and the Abbott Ranch in 1878. But the two survey maps for the ranches are conflicting, because apparently map making in the 1870s in Wyoming was not that great. So, circa 1870s, the property lines between the Tillerson Ranch and the Abbott Ranch were not well defined. Then the lawyer gives some baffling legal advice to the Abbotts. He just tells them to give up and hand over millions of dollars worth of land to the Tillerson. I actually screamed at the show at this advice because I think that most people would recognize that that's some stupid advice. In another confusing moment, it is mentioned that the laws of Wyoming are with the Tillerson's claim, which again seems nonsensical. The reason that none of this makes any sense is two words, and also a favorite law student topic, adverse possession. Adverse possession is a legal concept where someone other than the true owner can gain title to land by possessing it for a certain amount of time. It is sometimes referred to as squatter's rights. The historical justification for adverse possession was that it ensured the effective utilization of land, even if it wasn't by the true owner. In the turbulent context of European history, this makes sense. If the true owner is displaced and does not come back for a period of time, likely because they were killed in battle, are on a crusade, or they're just an absent owner, then industrious folks are incentivized to move onto the abandoned land and to make use of it because there's a potential for ownership. In the modern context, adverse possession can be useful in offering finality to land claim, because it is essentially a statute of limitations for bringing an ejectment case. The basic elements of adverse possession are actual, open, and exclusive possession of property in a manner that is hostile to the true owner's interest. The possession must be continuous for the statutory time period and made under a claim of right or color of title. A useful acronym to remember the elements is ONHAC: Open, Notorious, Exclusive, Hostile, Actual, Continuous. So, what do all these crazy words mean, and how does one acquire title to land through adverse possession? Actual possession requires that the possessor is physically occupying the property. The adverse possessor possesses the property openly by acting as though they are the true owner, which in turn makes their possession hostile to the interests of the true owner, because the true owner is no longer in possession of their own property, nor are they benefiting from the use of the property. The adverse possessor cannot have the permission of the true owner or have some sort of agreement to be in possession of the property, like a lease. Generally, if the true owner is aware that someone is in possession of their property, but they do nothing, then this is not considered permission. The possession also has to be exclusive. So possession cannot be claimed against land that is open to public use or is being occupied by various unconnected people. The continuous element in the U.S. is governed by each state's laws. States vary in how long someone has to be in possession of the property before they can claim ownership, from a low end of 5 years, like in California or Montana, to a high end of 30 years in Louisiana and New Jersey. Many states will allow an adverse possession claim after a shorter period of time if the adverse possessor has a deed or has paid taxes on the property or has both. For example, Arizona requires possession for 10 years with no action, but lowers the time needed to 5 years if the property is in a city or town and the adverse owners have a deed and paid taxes. The time frame is lowered even further to 3 years, which is actually the lowest in the country, if there is a deed and taxes paid on rural property. A lot of states require that the adverse possessor paid taxes for some or all of the statutory time period. Wyoming, where Outer Range takes place, requires continuous possession for 10 years, with no requirement of a deed or paying taxes, which actually makes Wyoming one of the more relaxed states for adverse possession, which makes sense because there's a lot of land in Wyoming and not as many people. Wyoming's rules for adverse possession gives the Abbotts a strong claim on the land that the Tillersons are trying to claim as theirs. According to Wyoming's adverse possession laws, the Abbotts only have to show that they have been in exclusive possession of the land for 10 continuous years prior to legal action being taken by either side. Although it is not mentioned explicitly in the show whether the fence and the use for cattle grazing has been going on for 10 years, we can assume from the clues given in the plot that for as long as Royal has been a part of the Abbott family, the pasture has not changed. And that is definitely more than 10 years, because Royal shows up as a young teenager and is now old enough to have two adult sons and a granddaughter that is definitely more than 10 years old. Also, the state of Wyoming does not require the abbots to have done anything else other than possessing the property as though they are the true owners. The abbots have been treating the disputed pasture as though they owned it since the 1870s because they believed that it was theirs. There's no intent element to adverse possession. The possessor does not actually need to know that they are occupying someone else's land. They simply must show that they have dominion over the property. This possession is considered hostile only because it goes against the rights of the true owner to possess their own property, and not because there's some sort of hostile intent involved. The only potential question here is whether the seasonal nature of grazing cattle in the pasture counts as being exclusive and continuous. After all, technically, the disputed pasture land is only being used occasionally to graze cattle, because the abbots, like most ranchers, rotate the cattle regularly to allow the vegetation to grow back after the cattle have been eating it. In the show, Royal even moves the cattle out of the disputed pasture early, because they lose a few cows and he doesn't want to lose any more. So, does the fact that the abbots don't have a permanent structure or year-round presence on the land hurt their adverse possession claim? The answer is no. The case law is pretty clear that continuous and exclusive possession can be shown by putting up and maintaining a fence and grazing cattle on the land. In fact, this use is almost identical to a Supreme Court of Wyoming case decided in 1979, Shores v. Lindsay. In that case, the court rejected an argument that cattle grazing is too sporadic and scattered to be continuous possession. In Shores, the plaintiffs acquired their land in 1961, and the defendants in 1962. There was a pre-existing fence between the two properties, and the defendants believed that the fence represented the true boundary line. The plaintiffs were told that the fence line was actually off by about 10 to 12 feet, and they learned this shortly after they acquired the land, but they waited to say anything for 10 years. A licensed survey was done in 1976 and determined where the true property line was, and in 1976 was when the lawsuit was filed. The defendants won the case based on their use of the property to graze cattle from 1964 to 1976, and their belief that the fence represented the true border. This is fairly settled law in Wyoming. In the Shores case, the Wyoming Supreme Court cites case law as far back as 1870 and 1887. Notably, both of those cases are decisions from the California State Supreme Court, which was the highest judicial body over the then Wyoming territory. Wyoming only became a state in 1890. So this is case law that's settled well before Wyoming even becomes a state, but is codified in Wyoming statute. The 1870 California decision that the Supreme Court of Wyoming cites states that, quote, "The general principle which underlies all this class of cases is that the acts of dominion must be adapted to the particular land, its condition, locality, and appropriate use. The philosophy of the rule is that by such acts the party proclaims to the public that he asserts an exclusive ownership over the land, and the acts which he performs are in harmony with his claim of title." End quote. In Shores, the court goes on to explain, quote, "A person who rests his claim of adverse possession on the grazing of livestock on the land in question is not required to continuously pasture the herd throughout the entire year. Continuous dominion and control is proven when land suitable for grazing and pasturage is occupied and used in such manner during the full period of the growing season." End quote. The court also notes, with regard to the fence, that, quote, "It is a generally recognized principle of law that the pasturing of livestock within the substantial enclosure, including a fence, can be sufficient to establish the elements of adverse possession." End quote. So, by using the pasture to graze cattle in a manner consistent with the general way that cattle is raised in the area, and by doing it within an enclosed fenced area, the abbots have met the state's requirements of continuous and exclusive possession. It is also mentioned in Shores that once a claimant has satisfied the requirements of adverse possession, the burden of proving any explanatory circumstances to that possession shifts to the disputing party. This means that it's up to the Tillerson to explain why that land should be theirs, and they would need to offer proof that contradicts the abbot's claim under adverse possession. This proof cannot be that they did not know that it was their land until they were surveying the area for possible mineral deposits. Failure to inspect your land for possible interlopers and ignorance of your land's actual boundaries are not defenses against adverse possession claims once the statutory period is met. By not being diligent landowners, the Tillersons lost any right to the disputed tract of land, and their legal action to take back the land is, at the very least, a decade too late, but is actually centuries too late. The abbots have actually gone above and beyond what is required for adverse possession in Wyoming, because they also have a deed for the land, and possibly have even been paying the property taxes on the land they believed was theirs. When the first abbots bought the land in 1878, the disputed strip of land was included on the survey map of their parcel. Technically, this means that the deed was not valid, because the description of the property was wrong, and it included property already owned by the Tillersons. As I mentioned before, the basic definition of adverse possession includes that possession is hostile under a claim of right or color of title. Claim of right is basically a fancy way of saying claim of ownership. Color of title is a claim of ownership based on a defective document. If an adverse possessor gains ownership to property under a claim of right, they only own the property they are in possession of. So if they only ever used a small amount of the true owner's large piece of land, then they could only claim the amount that they actually used. With color of title, the adverse possessor can claim ownership over all of the property described in the document, even if they only ever possessed part of the land. When the abbots bought the land, they were given defective title to the property, because the property's description was wrong. However, the abbots continued in their use and possession of the land as it was described in the defective document, and would be able to claim ownership of the disputed land under color of title. So even though the entire conveyance of the land to the abbots was invalid, they would have gained ownership to the entire parcel as described in the defective deed through adverse possession. The abbots gained title to the entirety of the property stated in their deed as it was charted in the 1878 map. Moreover, their claim is actually stronger than the Tillersons at this point. So, by openly, actually, and continuously possessing the disputed land by using it as pasture to graze cattle, building a fence to make their possession exclusive, and occupying the land for 10 consecutive years, the abbots have fulfilled the requirements of Wyoming's adverse possession statute. This is why the lawyer's advice is completely bonkers. The abbots have clearly gained ownership to the disputed land, and both the Wyoming statutes and over a century of Wyoming Supreme Court case law supports the abbots' claim. The only reason the Tillersons are even capable of making a play for the land is because they paid off the county assessor, which is a crime. And they are apparently very litigious, which scares everyone into just doing what they want. Even if no one can prove that the county assessor was bribed, the abbots would win their case on appeal, and I would argue that it's way harder and much riskier to try and bribe judges. Beyond the abbot's attorney giving them bafflingly dumb legal advice, he is also in serious violation of ethics rules. That's right, folks. Despite all the jokes and dramatic portrayals of lawyers as being slimy, unethical sharks, an insult to sharks, by the way, lawyers are actually required to follow both state and federal ethics rules. Failure to follow these rules can result in the lawyer being sued for malpractice, being subject to discipline, and even being disbarred and losing their license to practice law. One of the fundamental rules of being a lawyer is the duty to be a zealous advocate for the client. This means understanding the client's goals and doing everything that you can to help the client achieve those goals, both legally and ethically. Lawyers also have a duty to be competent, which means that they either need to be well-versed in the area of law and the issue presented to them by the client, or they need to research and become well-versed. Other than having or gaining the knowledge and experience needed to represent a client, an attorney can also bring in another attorney that is competent in that area of law, or they must refuse to represent the client. It is simply not good lawyering to only offer one opinion and one course of action to a client, especially when it goes directly against the client's stated goals. Here, the Abbotts are adamant that they are not selling the ranch. In just the first few episodes, two separate characters offer millions of dollars to Royal Abbott for the disputed pasture land, and he turns them down. He does try to work out a deal with Wayne Tillerson by offering him a different piece of land, but Tillerson isn't interested because that land doesn't have the mineral deposits he wants. This is the only concession ever offered by Royal. Despite all this, and Royal flat out telling his lawyer that he does not want to lose the land, the lawyer only tells him that he should just give the land to the Tillersons. He does not seem to base his advice on any laws or case law, and the only research he appeared to do was to look into the original survey maps. Which is crazy, because even when I first looked into this, a very short look at the case law showed that, obviously, in Wyoming, adverse possession would be in the Abbott's favor. And I'm not a Wyoming attorney, so it wasn't that difficult. So either this lawyer is really bad at his job, or he has also been paid off by the Tillerson. Both are ethical violations, but one is just incompetency, and the other is a massive conflict of interest that was neither disclosed nor consented to by Royal Abbott. The lawyer did seem older, so maybe he's 1 foot out the door to retirement and does not want to get involved in the case. However, if that's true, he still has a duty to end his representation of the Abbotts and to inform them that they need to seek different legal counsel. If the issue is simply that the lawyer truly believes, based on real evidence and experience, that the Abbott's claim will fail or does not have any merit, then he can certainly express those concerns with Royal. Part of a lawyer's job is to manage a client's expectation. And they should always be upfront and honest with the client about potential outcomes. However, managing expectations in the Abbott's case would be explaining to Royal the legal weaknesses in his claim and the possibility that the Tillersons will drag the litigation out until Royal runs out of money to continue fighting. Anyone with even a passing familiarity with law in this country will know that legal questions rarely have black and white answers. So any legal advice given in absolute terms without explanation is probably bad advice. Royal really needed to seek out a second opinion, if not fire his lawyer entirely and just get new representation. So, in the opening to this episode, I gave an example of a neighbor encroaching on a new neighbor's land. The new neighbor discovers the encroachment right away. And if they do go introduce themselves and mention that the roses are on their property, then they have acted to remedy the situation. Of course, depending on the jurisdiction and the amount of time the neighbor has been gardening in the other yard, it is possible the previous owner already lost ownership to the encroached area, or at least gave some implied consent for the neighbor to continue gardening in that part of the yard. If that is the case, the new neighbor better hope they have solid title insurance, or they can sue the previous owner for the lost value of the property, because it is smaller than the new neighbor thought it was when they bought it. If the roses are a fairly new development or was an issue addressed by the previous owner, then the new neighbor has options. The least of these would be to work out a neighborly compromise, like moving the roses to the actual property line or buying the rose plants from the neighbor. The more extreme options would involve suing for ejectment, which would force the neighbor off the property, and putting up a fence on the true property line, and keeping the roses. Or the slightly less dramatic action of agreeing to sell the encroached piece of property to the neighbor for its market value, and redrawing the property lines. These options are made possible by the timeliness of discovering the problem. The Tillersons lost any options that they may have had because they did not act sooner. As soon as they bought their parcel in 1872, they probably should have had it surveyed out and put up a fence on all the land described in the deed. The moral of this plotline in Outer Range is to be a diligent and knowledgeable landowner. If you own land, you should know exactly where the property lines are, and be vigilant about people trespassing on your land. Another important thing to take away from the show is that if a lawyer only gives you one solution to your legal problem, and does not explain the laws behind that single solution, you might need to find another lawyer. Thank you for listening. This show is researched, written, and recorded by me, Celeste Young. None of the legal advice or opinions expressed in this episode are intended as specific or individualized legal advice. Please like, subscribe, rate, or review this podcast if you enjoyed it. If you have any questions or comments, please email them to waitisthatlegal@gmail.com. You can find the podcast on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Inspect your land for interlopers, and do not give them permission to stay.